It may have been Thanksgiving week for the Americans, but there was lots to give thanks for the world over in this week's Bourse Business News. Welcome to the Exchange Invest Weekly. My name is Patrick L. Young, publisher of the daily newsletter of Exchange's Exchange Invest. Amongst those giving thanks this week were, of course, the United States of America, but in addition, there were a lot of folks to give thanks in London, the London Stock Exchange Group, no less. Shareholders have blessed the $27 billion Refinitiv takeover deal. All that's needed now, of course, is a management miracle to make the integration work. So there were two major charitable announcements in one day, the Foundation Day and the, well, what can we call it, the Southeast Bourgeois Subsidy Fund, perhaps, ladies and gentlemen. That way, LSEG are going to be paying millions for thousands of consultants over several years to all eventually fail to integrate Refinitiv effectively. One sensational piece of news this week, the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange, gosh, they're blooming as a publicly listed company. Adjusted profits in the third quarter of 2019 up no less than 266%. Quite the debut numbers for a listed company. Bursa Malaysia, they disposed of 85,000 of the ordinary shares that they held in the Nasdaq-listed CME Group in the open market, while the Bombay Stock Exchange is going to be selling 4% of its stake in the CDSL via an offer for sale in order to meet SEBI's prescriptive guidelines. However, of course, the biggest deal in and around the parish this week was Charles Schwab announcing finally their incredible, almost some form of repo in a way. One might call it a negative commission repo or a zero commission repo. They're going to buy TD Ameritrade, creating a brokerage behemoth. Ignore what they said in some parts of the retail press about, well, he was actually doing something, Chuck Schwab that is, completely alien to the concept of various of the infamous rules by the sage of Omaha, Warren Buffett, in investment by using their scrip in order to buy the company. It's a fascinating business. They're going to be moving the Charles Schwab headquarters out of San Francisco. Everybody's going to be centering in Texas, no less. Of course, that's essentially fascinating because the opportunities, therefore, are how will this ultimately be branded? At the moment, we're going for Charles Schwab in continuation, but surely there could be something more creative here. TD Schwab, perhaps, or Charles Ameritrade cannot be ignored. In fact, I think Charles Ameritrade could even spawn a Marvel comic offshoot, albeit given the common diminutive used for the acquiring firm's founder. Why not call the newly reformed Charles Schwab and TD Ameritrade Chuck Trade? After all, the merger itself was built upon the Chuck brokerage movement in the United States of America. New York Stock Exchange, they let the cat out of the bag this week. They're pushing to let direct listings raise capital in an alternative to, well, the frankly somewhat tawdry and out-of-date and vastly expensive IPO method. This is a new hybrid model. Well, it's not that new, but it's a new model that's going to be allowed on the NYSE, and it comes after criticism by venture capital investors of the traditional IPO process. That's not all. VCs aren't the only people that have been complaining about this. It's brilliant news all round, because for decades, the route to the public markets, the IPO process, is becoming increasingly broken. The avenue of direct listings clearly offers an alternative to the analog expensive IPO process for firms. Those firms who wish to be nimble and, let's face it, save 7% or thereabouts of the funds raised. IPOs are fundamentally outdated in the digital markets universe. This whole concept, bravo, John Tuttle, New York Stock Exchange, and all the folks who are proposing it, is a sound step to helping secure public markets by reducing their need for investment bankers who have written their own redundancy checks through their ongoing reluctance to reform their practices. Once again, applause all round to the NYSE, its president Stacey Cunningham et al. Direct listing is a great move forward and a super way to help aid the public markets to be what they ought to be, the epicenter of free market capitalism. Over in Asia, a good example of just how wondrous free market capitalism can be is, well, naturally, the Hong Kong Exchanges Group. They're in Alibaba, attaining its secondary listing. The stock leapt 8% on its first day's trading and hasn't looked back since, with some significant gains all the way into the weekend. In a little financial centres news, there was a story in Fortune this week in the wake of Brexit, Amsterdam is the new London. Amsterdam has received a small hamlet of London folks from the Big Smoke, the great city itself, seeking an EU base. The notion that somehow or other London's multi-millennial financial centre future, long term, is threatened remains frankly piffle. I was tempted to wonder on LinkedIn this week, what are they smoking in Amsterdam if they believe this? Oh, wait. In new markets, the Indian Natural Gas Exchange, the first of its kind, is going to be unveiled by March. Meanwhile, Europe took a step towards some degree of free stock trading, and it actually is, well, fundamentally free. Apex is the name of the product. It's being offered by Equiduct, the Börse Berlin offshoot, which of course recently came under a new degree of ownership structure. And Equiduct are effectively going to offer a fee-free retail funnel, giving retail investors a chance to build up their wodge of orders, and that will obviously build a wodge of orders within Equiduct itself, some wondrous content, which clearly Equiduct hope will entice institutional and shorter-term professional flow to pay to trade against it. What a very interesting idea, and actually genuinely, cleanly free of trading fees, as opposed to the smoke and mirrors approach of the USA, where they say they're not charging you any brokerage, but they're actually selling your order flow to all manner of third-party actors. Meanwhile, over in the Bahamas, the Bahamas International Securities Exchange, BISX, their 20-year effort to have the more than $3 billion in local government bonds listed and traded has not quite happened by the expected date. Coming soon. In India, the Indian International Exchange, they're planning to waive fees in the Gift City Financial Centre platform, which of course you can recall was set up in order to entice overseas business. They're trying to get the rupee trade to come back home. I suppose one could say, make Gujarat great again. As ever, a wodge of Cum-Ex stories this week, even a Freshfields lawyer being arrested. Clearly I'm not a lawyer, and clearly I don't want to in any way prejudice any sort of trial or other proceedings, but to me, Cum-Ex is just such an abrogation of common sense, whatever may be deemed feasible via the statutes. Back to the trading hours debate that Brussels Bugle was leading again with another added call from various European investors to call for a shorter trading day. Has to be said, I do find it quite startling the hashtag first world problems that many people seem to attribute to this. There was one consultant, Anita Carpy, a very, very reasonable and decent woman who runs an excellent business in the City of London, but I have to say I thought she was demonstrating a mellifluous tin ear this week to what happens to normal folks in non-financial jobs. What she said was, when looking at the accountability against remuneration, buy-side trading is not a job where people are earning elaborate amounts of money when factoring in the pressure to perform during long working days. Well, first up, as an entrepreneur, I have to say, it strikes me that they're pretty slow-flakingly short days that these people are working in the buy-side trading world. But in the real world, I have to say, I mean, dear Anita, I hadn't reckoned upon you as a snowflake. But seriously, try looking at, say, the sort of working conditions, the pay and the hours that are being worked in Stoke in the north of England at this juncture. You'll see pretty fast, the City of London has an incredibly privileged existence. Oh yes, it involves hard work. Oh yes, it involves rather long hours. But it is an incredible degree of remuneration, which the rest of the country, the rest of the world's workers outside of finance, would frankly kill to have. It also has to be said, I'm with the wise women who were reported by the Financial Times thus, and I quote, "The push has not been universally welcomed, and some women argue that low market liquidity and macho culture on the trading floor are two distinct issues that should not be conflated." Hear, hear, I say. Given the exchange-traded derivatives business split shifts to allow for Asia time and Chicago time over 30 years ago, this whole thing, this whole argument about buy-side and sell-side trading hours in the equity market does strike me as another good example why cash market folks really do think in the binary and are therefore somewhat lesser financial thinkers and beings than the derivatives people. Speaking of people news, not so many big job news this week, but there was a little bit of controversy across the parish. First of all, there was the news that, well, Kelly Loeffler, the brilliant CEO of the Bakkt Exchange, who has been with Intercontinental Exchange for many's a year, she may be making a move towards the Senate. Currently, POTUS, Donald Trump, seems to need to be convinced he's looking towards one of his very loyal acolytes as being the alternative possible candidate, the latter being elevated from the House of Representatives. The new Georgia senator would have to win a special election in November 2020 to finish the term of Senator Isaacson. Tragically, the incumbent is standing down as senator following a Parkinson's diagnosis a few years back. The governor of Georgia clearly has an eye on his re-election in 2022, which is also the next official senatorial cycle in the state, against Stacey Abrams, who, if memory serves me correctly, still hasn't conceded her rather narrow defeat last time around. It's quite obvious that the attraction to Kelly Loeffler of managing to have another self-made successful woman on his ticket would be a very, very useful foil in trying to defeat the Democratic candidate at the next gubernatorial election. Over at TMX Group, a little bit of a kerfuffle. As you may have heard, Mayor Mike Bloomberg wants to become Messiah Mike Bloomberg by becoming president. He also intends to do that with a State of Press, which is close only to Pravda in terms of its surreal nature. And I speak, of course, of Pravda at the height of East-West tensions during the Cold War. Indeed, Bloomberg itself is no longer a reputable independent news outlet, despite having some 2,500 apparently professional journalists. This is, of course, a tragedy. However, Mayor Mike has decided, or indeed Messiah Mike, if you want to call him that, Messiah Mike has decided that what we have is a Bloomberg news agency that doesn't report on him and his family. So therefore, if it's not going to report on the Bloombergs, it should not report on any of the other Democratic candidates. However, it's absolutely free to go after Republicans. If that doesn't strike you as some form of Citizen Kane Max 1984 Orwellian nightmare of agitprop, I'm not sure what does. Of course, therefore, the rest of the media, who are trying to demonstrate the credentials that they are actually fair and unbiased towards any candidate, immediately laid in. One of the stories that was written up was in Business Insider discussing a bro culture, somewhat of a, well, what seemed to be a bit of a frat boy atmosphere, akin to the 1980s and 1990s in so many parts of financial markets, alas. So looking back, who's been caught up in the storm? None other than parishioner, now CEO but formerly long-time data markets executive Lou Eccleston, the chief executive of TMX. No charges are apparently outstanding, but it seems he did end up on the wrong side of a few memos along the way, which means that the TMX Group is looking into the past conduct of its CEO as a result of these stories. Interesting to see how that fans out and what the actual, well, truth of the matter will be when we get more details. There's only one daily news source for the business of bourses, Exchange Invest, the exchange of information. Exchange Invest publishes the daily digest of everything in the market structure industry around the world in a user-friendly email briefing format from Monday to Friday. With additional pith by former Exchange CEO and long-standing fintech pioneer Patrick L. Young, yes, that's me, Exchange Invest is the unique one-stop shop for the daily news in markets, market operators, and related functions. Exchange Invest is available to subscribers at $200 per user per year or currency equivalent. You can get more details at exchangeinvest.com or email me, patrick@derivativesvision.com. Over in regulation news, the Indian Commodity Participants Body is going to create an investor database in an effort to rein in defaulters. Only what, 5 years, 6 years after the NSEL debacle? Well, never too late to manage to implement something like this, which is a great improvement and should be beneficial for the credibility of Indian markets, which continue to be harmed inevitably by the NSEL fallback. ESMA, meanwhile, are moving premises in Paris. Interesting to see they're moving in precisely the opposite direction to the Paris La Défense Financial Centre by going east, which means they're going to be the opposite end of Paris to where Euronext et al. Now reside. Mini-bonds were a topic of much discussion this week in the UK. Mini-bonds being small bonds that you can sell to retail investors, amongst others. The UK regulators have issued a crackdown on various of the bonds. That has led to, amongst other things, a weird accusation that it was all Google's fault, it seemed, the UK regulator was saying. I mean, there have been a few duff deals, but a lot of very good mini-bond deals. At the same time, the lack of teaching of due diligence to investors across the UK and the general feeling that investors must be protected from themselves are always going to be a problem in this digital world. The difficulty is not Google. The difficulty is the nanny state has to understand that we need investor education rather than simply cosseting and blanketing our investors in a form of don't let you do anything remotely attached to risk because it might harm you. That's simply not a credible way to move forward in a digital world. Over in Sri Lanka, some amazing tax cuts across the board. Amongst other things, for stocks, we'll be delighted to see that withholding tax on interests has been removed, and also, more importantly, capital gains tax, as many of the brokers were hoping for, imposed on the Colombo Stock Exchange, has also been removed for registered investments at the national bourse. The FSB have finally published their final SME financing evaluation report, and SEBI may allow unlisted firms to sell their debt securities on exchanges. An excellent move all round.
Thanks for listening to Exchange Invest Weekly. We welcome your feedback. You can contact me directly, patrick@derivativesvision.com, with any comments. Meanwhile, if you enjoyed this show, we would welcome you giving us a thumbs up. Or if you have time, a positive review will always be welcome, wherever you find this podcast.
In technology, pretty sparse week overall. There was a feature in the Financial Times about how investment analysts have become data miners. It's an interesting article, albeit the unspoken point appears to be what I would have thought is the rather instructive point. Financial market seers have apparently proven incapable of self-analysis as to the coming trends in analysis itself. Meanwhile, one deal signed this week in technology, the Pakistan Stock Exchange, which you'll remember has a cornerstone group of shareholders from China, they've signed an agreement with the Shenzhen Stock Exchange to upgrade their trading systems. In product news this week, Saudi Aramco, the roadshow carries on. Various international orders apparently coming into what is now an oversubscribed order book. And of course, expense justification appears the name of the game as the international investment banks try to mask their Aramco fiasco in terms of being cut out of the deal and the deal itself ending up being only very limited in its marketing through essentially the Gulf states. Therefore, on the axis of disappointment to failure, readers are free to calibrate just where the actual element of disappointment or failure has lain with the investment banks. But nonetheless, the Aramco IPO is going to succeed, it appears, at its lower valuation and much, much smaller pro rata extent of issuance. Over in Tokyo, a lot of discussion this week about the regulatory-driven improvements to the market. Amongst others, they're going to allow fast-track promotion to the big board itself from lower listing categories. Elsewhere, back in the Middle East, the Abu Dhabi Securities Exchange, they're going to be allowing short-term trading of stocks. In India, the BSE, the Bombay Stock Exchange, and the National Stock Exchange have issued a framework for listing commercial paper. And meanwhile, in Singapore, some great plans there. They're going to drop minimum trading price rules, therefore saving listings from the threat of delisting if they happen to end up as being some degree of penny stocks. Public consultations will be held in relation to the trading price rule issue in the first half of 2020. Market watchers welcome SGX's willingness to change course, according to the Business Times of Singapore. News from Down Under. In the New Zealand Herald this week, why the ASX keeps pinching our companies. I have to say, is that headline not the wrong way round? Could we not celebrate how New Zealand Exchange grows companies that then have to go to larger exchanges and then grow further? The accounting software company Xero has doubled in value after a year on ASX, and that surely demonstrates precisely that it needed a new international market to play in. Or to put it another way, if the All Blacks just stayed at home, where would rugby be? I applaud NZX, and indeed, I think the issue is to applaud NZX and indeed concern ourselves with how it keeps the flow of content. Don't endeavour to stop companies moving their listings or stigmatise success. Meanwhile, in other stories, how Bruce McLaren failed Kiwi Motorsport by building his racing team in England. In Africa, local rice is going to be listed for the first time on the Ghana Commodity Exchange. And in Morocco, they're deepening the money derivatives and capital markets. The central bank has introduced a Moroccan overnight free rate. I can't help but notice that the event with the EBRD was a launch organised in the city of Rabat. In Polish, the word Rabat means discount or sale. Moroccan overnight free rate launched at a discount. Is it a sign of Moroccan monetary policy, I wonder? And that, ladies and gentlemen, leaves us at the end of a very rapid run-through of what was a slightly shorter in terms of news flow week than ever. Nevertheless, we managed to get over 130 stories into the Exchange Invest Daily newsletter, which you've missed if you are not already a subscriber. Do send us an email or get in touch if you'd like to be part of the exclusive group of people who read the Daily Business of Bourse newsletter. My name is Patrick Young, and thank you for listening to the Exchange Invest Weekly. I wish you all a great week in markets. This show relates to the business of bourses. It is not to be construed as investment advice, nor are we making any investment recommendations.
Please consult an investment advisor before you make any investments, and for goodness sake, do your due diligence and do not make investments without complying with the regulations in your home state. Exchange Invest cannot be held responsible for any investment decisions made as a result of our program, which is for entertainment purposes only. The material herein is copyright Patrick L. Young at the date of publication, while our music and sound effects are sourced from copyright-free sources. Thanks for listening to Exchange Invest Weekly, the exchange of information.